Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? Yeah, not great for our already struggling environment. That's why I'm so excited to talk about our partner today, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. And the concept is pretty simple. You just fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. I literally just tried out the laundry tablet, and instead of having to bring my huge container like I normally do down the hall, I just brought the one tablet and my clothes came out so clean, just as clean as normal. I'm fully on board. It just makes my life easier and I'm helping the environment. And the best part, Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dateable. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/dateable for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dateable to get 15% off.
The Dateable podcast features real stories from real people of how they make modern dating work or not. I'm your host, Yue, former dating coach turned dating insider, if you will. On each episode, you'll hear commentary from my producer, Julie Kraftchick, and other surprise co-hosts. This episode of Dateable is brought to you by 500 Brunches. 500 Brunches connects like-minded people with similar interests to meet in real life over brunch. You answer a quick questionnaire about your interests and how you spend your time, and then they'll match you in small groups of 6 to 8 at a brunch spot in San Francisco. Get a free entry into a brunch now by signing up at 500brunches.com and using the code DATEABLE. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Dateable, a show all about modern dating. And along with modern dating, there comes consequences, as we all know. We've talked about, you know, people flaking and ghosting, but what about STDs? I mean, that's also a consequence of modern dating today. And today we have an expert. Her name is Dr. Sheila Lawanzan. And she is in the house with us in this really cute pantsuit that I can't stop looking at.
I feel like, her in.
You know, adult onesies are the way to go.
Yes, very comfortable.
And speaking of comfortable, let's talk about STDs, which are not comfortable. I want to give a little background on Dr. Lawanzan. She was born in San Jose. She's 37 years old, and she's in a monogamous relationship herself. Now, she's a board-certified OBGYN who was diagnosed with herpes at the age of 20. Mm-hmm. So she's had herpes for 17 years, and she wrote a book called Yes, I Have Herpes.
Mm-hmm. As if very there was bold. A point. Yeah. Bold, blunt.
As if there yes. could be any other title for that book, right? No beating around the bush. It's about her journey to acceptance, disclosure, and just giving reassurance to others who may be going through similar circumstances. So let's start with when you first got diagnosed. What was that like?
Yeah, so I was diagnosed when I was 20 years old. I was on my college campus with my first real boyfriend. I was a virgin, and we had actually probably dated for a year or so before we decided to kind of get into the sexual intimacy part. So like most of the patients that I see who are exploring their sexuality, it's usually when an STD happens, whether it's chlamydia, gonorrhea, or in my instance, herpes. And it was a situation where he had a history of cold sores, did not have any outbreak, and I had received oral sex. And it was after that that I started to notice sores in the genital area. It was very painful when I urinated, and I went to the campus nurse. And she pretty much said, it looks like herpes. I can't know for sure. I'm going to go ahead and do a culture. Here's the medication.
So he didn't have sexual herpes.
No, he had the cold sores on your mouth. Yeah, which are the ones that people get, you know, when their grandmother kisses them at Christmas, or, you know, they have cold sores that come out when it's really, really hot out, sunburns, things
like that. And because oral sex was involved, then it became sexual herpes for you.
Exactly. So herpes actually has two types. Type one is usually the oral type. Type two is the genital part. However, with the advent of oral sex, things are kind of spreading all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so how most patients I find are actually getting it is through oral sex with a partner who has a history of cold sores.
Well, that's why they tell you you're supposed to put condoms on your mouth.
Yes. Yes. So correct.
Most people don't.
But
do
most
that.
People don't mm-hmm. because that's super awkward. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's start talking about this. When did you write the book?
So I wrote the book. I had a little bit of a convoluted story because when I was diagnosed, the internet was not as rampant mm-hmm. as it is now. So I knew that it was a virus that people didn't really talk about. You know, I really didn't get any counseling from the nurse that I had seen on campus. So it was kind of like, be safe, here's some meds, don't have sex when you have an outbreak, bye.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? And I, you know, and I'm pre-med at the time. And I was in a serious relationship. However, with a lot of young relationships that we have, they don't always last. And I will say that I was very ashamed of the virus. And so I, through the course of about 15 years, was sexually active with people. I did not disclose my status. I was always very careful to not be sexually active when I had an outbreak. Mm-hmm. I was on suppression medication. But to verbalize and say those words were extremely difficult for me.
Right.
And so I had at one point gotten divorced and was dating again, and I kept attracting the same men over and over and over again. And I kept thinking, well, I can't keep blaming them. Mm-hmm. So there must be something going on. And I was attracting men who were not always forthcoming. They cheated on me. They lied about certain aspects of their lives. And I realized, I think that there's something here that I must be putting out into the universe that I keep attracting back to myself. So I actually took a break from dating and I said, okay, let's just start working with a life coach. Let's see if we can do a deep dive and figure out what's happening here. And we had processed through a lot of stuff and my coach was like, you know, there's just really something that I think we're not really overcoming. Can you think of anything? And for the first time in my life, I said, do you think it's the fact that I have herpes and I've never told anybody? Mm. And he was like, yes. So huge. Because, you know, if you're spending time looking in the mirror and thinking, I'm not worthy, I feel dirty, I deserve to be punished for my activities, that can really start to weigh on a subconscious level. So I did the work, I did the processing, fast forward, I'm dating, I'm being open, I'm sharing my, I'm disclosing, and I finally realized, you know, I have a really unique stance. I know that there are people out there in the community who also don't share their status, and, mm-hmm. you know, I realized that until I accepted the parts of myself that I was ashamed, embarrassed, frustrated, angry about, could I actually gain what I wanted, which was self-love and confidence and a partner that I could trust completely. And so I found that actually once I loved that part of myself and accepted it, mm-hmm. did I actually get what I was really looking for. And so I thought if I could share my story with other people to show, one, it's a struggle, put in the work, you can get there. Two, you can be very verbal and obvious, yes, I have herpes, and not be chastised and stoned in the streets, and you know, and you can thrive and be safe with it. I thought that was a great story. And of course, you know, on the backside of it is I'm a board certified OBGYN.
Right.
So I'm also coming from the perspective of being a healthcare provider.
Yeah, and gives you people. Credibility.
Yeah.
So rewind to when you first found out you had herpes. Did mm-hmm. you tell your boyfriend at the time?
Yes. So he did know. He knew. And we were both stunned because we were like, is that something? Can you really do that? And, you know, we didn't have research at the time. So we said, well, if the doctor is saying it, then it must be true.
Right. And in one of your interviews, you said after your book came out, you actually told all of your sexual partners who you didn't tell in the past about your situation.
Yeah.
And how did they react?
Yeah. So I actually told them before the book came out because I didn't want to blindside them any more than I have already.
Yeah, by the way.
Yeah. They're like in the bookstore. They're like, she looks familiar.
And they've been all really wonderful. I think the great thing is I was attracting a certain level of guys that were already decent people. Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, we understand. None of us have had an outbreak. Some didn't take it so well, but I think that they had one did not take it very well, but I think he had a little bit more of a personal issue with me. Not necessarily just because of the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I've still stayed in contact with all of them. They're still friends. But at the same time too, I knew that by telling them, I had created the situation myself. And mm-hmm. so any reaction that they could have possibly had was a reaction that I deserved. Mm-hmm. And it was a reaction that they could absolutely have and it would be okay.
Why do you think there is so much stigma attached to STDs?
Well, it's a few things. It's a little bit different than gonorrhea and chlamydia. You take an antibiotic, you don't even have to tell anybody.
Right.
A little bit different than HIV. You know, there's support groups out there. There's all this research that's happening. There's large communities out there. There's celebrities living with it. Mm-hmm. But herpes is something that people just don't want to talk about. You know, it originally started from a pharmaceutical stigma because they found that this was a very vulnerable group. Oh, if you have genital herpes, you don't want to have sex with it. So here, right. let's give you some medication because that's a bad thing to have. And so it really kind of just caught on. That was on the advent of, you know, the 60s and free love, 60s and 70s of free love and sex with everybody. And, you know, like it was a really good kind of push for people to stay at home and stay in monogamous relationships. And so it just went around like wildfire. And it's the butt of jokes mm-hmm. in movies right. and TV. Yeah. And there's no celebrities that have really come out and said, yeah. yes, I have this, I own this, and this is the way that it is. And so there's no face to it.
But even like HIV and even like chlamydia, there is a stigma still. Like I get like mm-hmm. it is more, you can just, I mean, HIV is different, but the others you can get rid of with a pill. Mm-hmm. But there's a stigma of like, I did something wrong, or like I did something.
I'm dirty.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what people think and of. It's like your example, like this is like your first time having sex with your boyfriend, which yeah. is like the least dirty mm-hmm. of that. Like, what's your thoughts on those stigmas?
And those are absolutely one of the difficult stereotypes, is because people usually think that it's like a dirty, promiscuous person.
Yes.
And I think yeah. that the hard part that a lot of people grapple with when they are diagnosed is that they're usually with their first partner, and it's usually in a monogamous relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's the first time that most people are like, my body is either failing me, or I don't understand it, or I have just no control. And so it's a big conversion of thoughts, and a lot of it becomes internalized because you really don't have a community where you can say, you know, just like, let's say you have a breakup and you can go to your best friend who probably understands in some nature right. of what's going on. And so it's very difficult. And I really wanted to come out just to show my colleagues and people that I know and patients that, hey, there is someone out there and they're doing fine. And the more that we talk about it and bring it out into the open,
yep.
I think the stigma can't survive. It can't survive in the dark when right. you know, people are out there talking about it.
I think there's a stigma attached to STDs because it's one of the only diseases where it involves you and someone else. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. everything else, it's like, this disease was genetics, it was passed down to me, right. or I contracted it, you know, through whatever.
Poor diet.
poor diet yeah. or through bacteria. But this is the only disease, if you come out, you're actually outing someone else,
yeah.
right?
Yep.
Like mm-hmm. your sexual partner. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why there is stigma, because, again, there's still sort of this negative connotation with sex in general. I know we've gone through sexual mm-hmm. liberation and all that. Mm-hmm. But there's still something dirty about that right. word sex. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. telling right. people that you do have sex and you contracted a disease from it is still seen negatively.
Yeah.
It's interesting, even in the office, women have a difficult time even saying the word sex. When I am... you know, with my husband.
I'm just like, you mean having sex? Yes. I was always like, and that happened.
You know,
like,
that thing?
Yes, that yep. thing. We, totally. You know, the,
you had to make the baby?
Uh-huh. You mean sex.
You mean intercourse. Yeah.
Right. We really got to get over that. So let's talk about, I want to talk about the scientific facts about yeah. About herpes, about STDs, about everything. So we've had a lot of listeners send in their questions.
Oh, great.
And some of these questions are very basic, but I think it's good to cover them. Mm-hmm. One of them is, what are some of the symptoms of herpes?
So usually when someone has a first outbreak, it's usually a sore. So if you think about it, some people out there can kind of liken it to like a canker sore.
Yep.
You know, like let's say you just, you know, eat some bread and it puts a cut in your mouth, or, you know, you eat some super acidic pineapple mm-hmm. and you get like a sore. So it's kind of like that, but on the genital area. I will tell you, it is not as scary as Google makes it look.
So don't Google it.
Don't Google. Never Google. So Google usually has a tendency to do something to like the umpteenth degree, yes. like the worst, scariest yes. possible thing ever, the thing that people see in sex ed in school.
Oh my God.
And so it's just one of those things where it's actually usually just either one or two sores. Uh-huh. Very important to be seen by a physician because sores like that can be also ulcerations from a really bad yeast infection, yep. or it can look like syphilis, or it can look like just a variety of different things that happen in the vaginal area. But it's usually just sores like that. Some people actually, the complaint that people say is it hurts when I urinate. Mm-hmm. But it's a little bit different than a UTI, a urinary tract infection, mm-hmm. which is more like it hurts when as the urine is coming out.
Like more internal, right?
Yes. This is a little bit more like when the urine hits the wall, the vaginal skin is yep. when it hurts. Mm-hmm. So if I have a young patient in the office and she says it hurts when I urinate, I'm usually like, let's examine you just yeah. to make sure.
Yeah. What about for men?
For men, just because of the where the urethra is, they don't have the urinating thing. It's usually just the sore. So it would be on the shaft.
The whole usually. Thing, like I remember, like obviously with other STDs, you get blood work or you get just different diagnosis. But with herpes, I actually like recently got like just I get my test run annually, and yeah. I looked to see if herpes was on there. Yeah. Reached out, and they were like, actually, we don't test that with blood tests regularly. Mm-hmm. So that being said, yeah. how do you know, like, I mean, I guess obviously the symptoms is one way, but, like, what if you don't have them? Could you pass it to someone before getting tested, per se?
That is one of the biggest issues in the community. Mm. Because, so herpes, from a physician standpoint, herpes to us is when there's a genital sore that you take a culture mm. of and it comes back positive. Mm-hmm. Now, that's how we say a person is herpes. The CDC, the Center of Disease Control and Prevention, does not believe in doing blood testing.
Right.
The reason why is because the blood test itself is extremely nonspecific. It can give false positives and false negatives. Hmm. Meaning if someone, let's say, did have the virus or had been exposed in their body at some point, like someone who has the flu, you may not necessarily be showing symptoms. Hmm. And then the test may not actually say that you're positive or negative, where we don't believe it. And the CDC itself feels that because the stigma of the virus itself is so dramatic for people, they would prefer to save people from that diagnosis. Huh. I think, in fact, that's the crux of where I believe the medical community should actually change, because it can be very upsetting for patients to not know their status. And I actually think right. that the people who have been exposed and, you know, maybe carriers but never had an outbreak, yeah. those are the people who can go around and be sexually active yeah. with people and then be passing the virus.
Right. Yeah, and they're not at fault either.
Right.
Because they didn't know.
Exactly. And so that's something that I would love to change in the community, just because I think it will help prevent the spread of the virus. But the blood test is so difficult to count on that that is also just the very difficult part.
So how can someone get tested?
So you can ask for it. You have to be fairly persistent. I will say because the medical community in itself just doesn't want to go against our governing bodies, you mm-hmm. know, so we don't want to go against the CDC or the Academy of American Congress of OBGYNs don't want to, encourage that at this point. So a lot of physicians will follow that. We're board certified physicians and that's right. the people that we follow. But I'm just seeing in the community how much strife it gives people to not know their status. And that's hard.
So would you just recommend that people ask for the tests on a regular basis
yeah.
if they're sexually active?
Yeah. If it's false positives, is that going to do anything?
So if it's a false positive, which means that the person is negative,
yeah.
then they're probably, they should be fine. But there is a transition period. So it's not to say that maybe they could become positive in the future, mm-hmm. you know? And so you just, I mean, I think the most important thing is to encourage safe sex.
Right.
That's really the most important thing out there, and to talk about your sexual histories, which can be very difficult for people to
totally,
do.
Totally.
How yeah. long does it take for that time going from having sexual intercourse to experiencing symptoms?
So usually they say within 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, so wow, in those okay. 2 to 3 weeks, you could still be having sex with other people and be passing on
right.
the virus. Mm.
What about some other STDs where there is more routine blood work? Like, what are kind of, just for people that may not do annual tests? Like, what are the process that you would recommend for people getting tested?
So in general, I recommend when people are sexually active to have an STD check about every 6 months. I think that that's very, very reasonable. The blood testing that can be done is on HIV, syphilis, hepatitis B, and hepatitis C. Those are all things that can be transmitted by blood or fluids, bodily fluids. You can do either a urine or a culture swab near the cervix for gonorrhea and chlamydia.
And is herpes the only STD that stays in your system forever?
Yes. I mean, I guess the other one is HIV and possibly the HPV, human papillomavirus.
Right.
Because even things like syphilis you can treat.
And just one last question about testing. Is there a way to test for oral, like mouth herpes as well? Or is that the same situation as?
Yeah, you can do the same culture that you do generally for the oral cold sores. Truthfully, unless it's, if it's a cold sore on the inside, which is more of like a canker sore, like from a trauma or the, you know, acidic food, that would be a canker sore. So that is not herpes. It's the ones that are on the outside, like on the corner of the lips, like on the dark border or on the border of your lips. Those are the ones that are.
Right. And how can you pass those on without oral sex?
So even by kissing. You can do that. That's how a lot of people's grandmothers or aunties kiss them on the lips, and then that's how that usually gets passed.
What about sharing food?
So it's not through inanimate objects. So it's not like through sharing a drink at a club or lipstick, although in general I just wouldn't encourage people to share lipsticks
for other reasons,
just for hygiene. Herpes is spread by skin to skin contact. So it really has to be skin to skin, kissing, touching, laying, things like that.
What about other STDs? Because I know HIV is not saliva, right?
So that is also just a break in the skin. So that can be in any kind of sexual situation.
But kissing is should not, right?
Kissing you should not, but it, I guess it just depends, because even if someone who is HIV positive, depending on their viral load, if there's any kind of cut vaginally or, you know, in the genital area, you can still pass it.
Got it.
So I guess the other thing that's important too is that even if we're talking about safe sex, condoms doesn't always protect. So I think that that's always something very important. So for instance, it's still skin-to-skin contact, but condoms really only cover certain parts. So if there is perhaps like a cut, let's say on the rectum, some people develop herpes outbreaks on the rectum. If you're in that area, you can also pass the virus.
What about when you don't have an outbreak? Can you still pass?
So there is some amount of viral shedding where generally within the first year of a outbreak, it's the highest amount of shedding of the virus that happens. And as your body develops antibodies and gets used to it, it can decrease. But studies do show that there can be transmission of the virus even when there is no outbreak.
So if you have herpes and you're in a long-term relationship with someone, you basically are expected to just give them herpes, right?
So there's a few things that you can do to prevent the transmission. One is using condoms. The other is avoiding, when you have an outbreak, to be sexually active. And then the third is you can take antiviral medication. And what that does is it can, it's a suppression that you can take every day. And it helps to decrease the amount of shedding too. So amongst those three things, you can prevent the spread to your partners.
Does it affect people who are trying to get pregnant?
Absolutely not. In fact, that's a very common question that people who have herpes come into the office requesting guidance on. I would say you can absolutely be sexually active without any issues. If you're concerned about your partner, you can take the pills daily, and that can decrease your outbreak likelihood. And people can deliver very healthy babies. They just take the medication at 36 weeks of their pregnancy to decrease any outbreaks, because if someone has a viral outbreak and is having a vaginal delivery, they can pass the infection to the baby.
Gotcha.
Got it. Yeah. And so, you know, in my career, I don't know, I've been doing this for 10 years and I know, delivered 3,000 babies. I've only had to do a C-section once for someone who thought she might be having symptoms. So if because of the thought process, we just said, you know, to be on the safe side, let's just do a C-section.
So sorry, just to clarify, if you have, if you don't have an outbreak, you can't pass it, or you can pass
you can.
It? You still can. Okay. Yeah. And then for other STDs, I know, like, if you got, like, chlamydia, for example, you take a pill within, like, that week, though, you can't have sex with your partner. Correct. Because then you'll be passing it back and forth.
Correct. And when you do have a herpes outbreak, how long does that outbreak last for?
So it depends. Like, people who, within the first year, sometimes the outbreaks can last a little bit longer, usually because they're not quite sure, first off, what it is, and then their body just has to kind of just get used to it, build the antibodies. When you take the suppression medication, it decreases the length of the time. So some people, the course of antiviral medicine can be for 5 to 7 days, and most people find their symptoms improve after like 2.
Got it.
But you have to take the full course. There are some people, for instance, who aren't on daily suppression, who when they have an outbreak, they think that they're starting to get it, they just start taking the medicine, it could be done in like 2 days.
Does your partner now have herpes? And if not, what are the preventative measures?
So he does not. Okay. He does not. He has not had an outbreak. Well, I guess that he's told me. But he actually had a girlfriend previously who had a history of herpes.
Got it.
He didn't contract it from that relationship either. So we are very cautious. It was a discussion that him and I made because my outbreaks are so few and far between. We decided that I would not be on a daily suppression. Again, I have very infrequent outbreaks to begin with, but if I do, or if I think, or I'm just not quite sure, then I will take the medication and will just abstain from being sexually active.
Got it.
But that was a discussion that him and I had to really make sure he felt comfortable, I felt comfortable, and that's something individualized to a couple.
So is it just your, like, your risk is up if you have an outbreak?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
And did you, when you enter into this relationship, when did you tell him?
Yes, so I told him on our third date. So I will say that I had dated several people beforehand, and I found my best method, and everybody's method is a little bit different, is to tell them about the third or fourth date, because that's usually the time that you're trying to figure out, do I want to be active
intimate
with someone? Yeah, and so I didn't want to do it, and most of the times I didn't tell people in the first one or two dates. Some people even say on their online profile, which I think is fine. But I wanted to get to know the person.
Right.
And because if I don't even like them, oh, I don't need to tell them my personal history at all. And so, but, you know, everybody's different. And I wanted it to be my choice. I didn't want it to be a situation where I have this virus, I need to take whoever guy comes along next. Yeah. I didn't think that was very fair to myself.
Yeah.
And I had, you know, done the work to realize that that was very important to me. So I wanted to find out if I even liked the guy first before I would even tell them. Right. And he was just like, well, do you have one now? No. Hey, let's go for it.
Let's go.
So what was, like, generally the reaction from most of these men, or did it vary?
So when I first started dating, the first few guys were a little bit like, it's not really quite my thing. I think that, you know, that's just not quite what I was looking for, which is okay. Because I realized that they were scared of the virus. They weren't scared of me.
Right.
They just didn't know how it was going to play into their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that's fine. There's going to be somebody else down the line, so it's okay. Thank you. And thanks for dinner. You know, that kind of thing. But then I started to attract men that were just so much better. Such a better match for me because they were men that were open, who were educated, who wanted to get to know me. And it really gave us the opportunity, like in one instance of this gentleman that I still am friends with and absolutely adore, is he's just like, you know, okay, that's interesting. I'm going to go ahead and do my own research and let's just keep talking about it. Let's just get to know each other. He had a lot of sex positive friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had spoken to them and he's a highly educated guy. And he just said, you know, I just really like you. Why don't we, you know, just kind of get to know each other? If you could be on suppression in case, you know, a crazy night happens, and at least we'll be okay. And we'll just go from there.
You know what boggles my mind? The amount of time people spend researching if they can combine certain drugs when they're at a music festival versus the amount of time they really should be educating themselves on STDs. Yeah. It just boggles my mind that people waste so much time on these other things that may not matter as much. Yeah. And like you said, it's all about educating yourself. It's right. nothing to be scared about, because if you knew more information about it, it doesn't become a monster, you know?
I will have to say that, you know, when I had told one of my great friends from med school that I was coming out with this book, she's like, whoa. I have a history of cold sores. Does that mean that I could have given it to my husband? Mm. And I was like, okay, we're both board certified. Wow. Yes. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Wow. And so it's just, it's a common misconception. And so I think that the education, particularly I think, you know, for all the male listeners out there who have a history of cold sores, that you can spread it to women. Right. And that's, I think, a really important point that I don't think gets honed in on in sex ed.
Because they don't think that they have an STD. Mm-hmm. It's just something that's happening. Mm-hmm.
I remember, I like what you're saying about, it's interesting to me, the sort of response you get from men actually determines their suitability for you, right? Because I remember in college, I had HPV, which like everybody had HPV at that time. Mm-hmm. I was like, Oprah, you know, you get HPV and you get HPV. And I remember I called, when I found out, I called my then sexual partner, who was not my boyfriend, and he immediately said, oh, are you sure? Yep. Are you sure I'm the one who gave it to you? Mm-hmm. Are you positive about that? Mm-hmm. Have you checked with the other men you slept with? I mean, there was a lot of blame and shame with it. And he immediately said, like, I don't want to talk about this anymore. He hung up the phone. And so I knew, okay, well, this guy obviously is not very mature and didn't want to have a conversation about it at all. Yeah. So it's interesting to see how people react to
it. But I think, like, on the other hand, not to, like, defend people, like, that's a different situation. But it's tough, like, I mean, you've obviously handled it so well and come to terms with it. But I can see how someone would say, like, if a guy had to pick between someone that doesn't have it or someone that does has it, why would they pick me? Like, how do you help people like that gain confidence?
I think in the end, you know, it's a natural filter. It really is a natural filter. And I think the important thing about that person who's choosing between the two is that it has no judgment on that person who's making the choice. Right. It's literally, he may be a perfect that person may be a perfect partner, but just maybe not the right person for you.
Right.
And we just have to accept it. And I think that that's the important thing about just this herpes platform in general. That is my platform. That's where my book came from. But it could be anything. Right. It could be someone with issues of infertility or weight or, you know, that they don't have blonde hair like their best friend. Or, you know, sure. I mean, it could be anything. And so really it's just building the self-confidence in yourself that while that person seems really great, just may not be the right person for you.
Right. There's something about dating for straight people, I know, that the gay community doesn't experience this, but for the person you're currently seeing, you kind of don't want to know about their sexual past.
Yeah.
You
know? Mm-hmm.
It's almost like I want to think about my partner as someone who's who's so pure but also amazing in the bedroom. Somehow gains just those skills magically. But I don't want to hear anything about your
selective.
Previous. It really is selective. And I wish we could be more open about talking about previous sexual partners. Yeah. I know it's a weird topic, but I like to know.
Yeah.
Right? Even with numbers. Some people are really weird about giving
your
numbers.
I think isn't it usually that you take the whatever number the woman gives and you multiply it by 3
or something like that.
And then it's like
divide by 2.
Yeah, seriously. Like that. But I think that's true though, especially with like STDs. If you have to, if you come forward and say you have an STD, it shows that you've had that sexual past. And like we were saying earlier, there's sometimes that like stereotype of it being more like promiscuous when it may not be that
Absolutely.
At all.
And at this age, I mean, we're all in our 30s. Even when you're in your 20s, we have to accept that whoever we meet now has had multiple partners.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter how many partners they've been with. It's really about how they treat you now.
Exactly.
Right?
So exactly. It brought you to the person who's sitting in front of you.
Yes. And it forms who they are. Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the takeaways that we have from all of this around how this can relate to dating?
Well, I think first and foremost, educate yourself. It's always good to know more than know less.
And get tested regularly. I know, like, when, I don't know the ins and outs of men's physicals, but I know with women, like, you do this on a regular basis, so mm-hmm. make sure you're getting those tests and requesting those tests.
Yeah, Dr. Lawenson said every 6 months. Mm-hmm. I think that sounds very reasonable. Mm-hmm. Also, disclosure. I think it's really important to disclose if you do have STDs before you become intimate with someone. Obviously not right in the moment, but if you feel like you're debating that, you know, maybe that time has come, that is a time to reveal, mm-hmm. right? And yeah. to disclose.
And I think, like you said, like how you say it too, like coming from it through a vulnerable state. Mm-hmm. I think also like having empathy that someone may be taken back by it and like mm-hmm. not expecting them to be like gung-ho right away mm-hmm. and not necessarily seeing that as a reflection of you, but more right. just them either not knowing about the disease or just processing it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really, I don't want to sound like an after-school special, but we really have to be more careful in this city.
I know.
People sleep around with each other. I mean, like, it's a small city, and we've probably all slept with each other in some way or another. We need to be more careful and be more safe. Not only we're protecting ourselves, but we're protecting other people.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, yes, in what you were saying with modern dating especially, you're like, people are dating more than ever before, but even like your situation is like your first boyfriend. Like I think just
yeah.
in general, you never know
where you're going to get it. You never know. So be respectful of other people and, you know, be careful, protect yourself, use condoms or just know the measures you need to take to be preventative. So I want to talk about some of the common misconceptions. We've talked about some of it, but does having STDs or I guess herpes in particular, affect your immune system?
So I actually do find that some patients who have more frequent outbreaks may have a lower immune system, you know, just from stress, diet, exercise, you know, kind of just those basic things. In general, I mean, it doesn't dwindle down your immune system.
So it's not a cause?
No.
Got it. When you do have herpes, can you affect other people other than the people who you're sleeping with? So could you affect your family members, your loved ones, your friends?
So I think that was a really, actually, that's a situation that had happened to me actually when my book came out. You know, my beautiful niece was born and I was very cautious where, you know, my herpes is genital. Mm-hmm. So it can, again, like I had said, been spread skin to skin. But I knew that my family would be very careful and concerned, you know, babies flail yeah, their arms, true. They do a whole bunch yep. of things. And I wanted to remove the concern that, oh, if it lands in my mouth, oh gosh, now the baby's going to get it. Mm. You know, puts her fingers in her mouth. And I really had to kind of just sit down with my family and say, you know, my outbreaks are down here. You know, if anything, I'm probably the most cautious I will ever be, even though I know I can't pass it to her by giving her a kiss. Right. You can see I always kiss her on the top of her head. Like, I'm never, like, on her face. You know, I kiss her on the arm. And so that's just really something that I'm super cautious about. And, you know, she has a higher likelihood of probably getting a cold sore herpes from all the other family who don't really know, and they're just right. kind of kissing her all over the place.
Right. So to that question, like, how do you tell other people, not like people that are significant yeah. others, but like, did you tell your parents? Did you tell yeah. like your friends? Like, how did you broach that conversation?
So most of my family and friends probably found out when my book came out.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I will tell most patients who ask me and a lot of the people who contact me through social media that they don't really have to tell their families or friends if they don't want to. I think the most important thing is to tell their sexual partner because that's right. really who it ends up affecting the most. If right. they want to, you know, I've had some people want to just tell everybody in the whole world and they've, you know, put it on their social media, then that is absolutely up to them. Mm-hmm. But they don't have to. I think it would help the stigma if we all just kind of went out and did right. it because about 80% of the population has herpes and just don't know it,
yeah.
Are sharing it. Yeah. And, you know, and it's not a reportable disease. It's not something that we, you know, tell our state like gonorrhea, HIV, why syphilis. Is that? Just because, well, we're not really tracking it, right? Because we're not doing the blood tests.
Right.
People don't die from it.
Right.
Truthfully, people don't die from it, and it doesn't cause infertility issues, and, you know, it isn't like a pandemic that, you know, the state has to try to control all the gonorrhea and chlamydia that are happening out there.
So what is the worst thing that could happen if you have herpes?
That you have outbreaks now and again. There are quotes that are out there that talk about how, like, oh, you know, herpes is just the skin rash that's really annoying. And there are a lot of people in the community who like and don't like that. Mm-hmm. But it is a skin thing that just happens now and again, and it can affect your sex life.
So it's just the pain of it.
It's a nuisance.
It's a nuisance. It's just the thing you have to deal with. But people who have psoriasis have those things.
Yeah.
It's common.
So what are some of the other symptoms or, like, consequences of the other STDs?
Yeah. So if there's gonorrhea and chlamydia, if it's untreated, it can cause pelvic inflammatory disease. So it can cause an infection on the inside of the uterus. Some people can just treat it with outpatient antibiotics. Some people need to be admitted to the hospital for IV antibiotics. And so that can take someone out of work and all that kind of stuff. If there's an untreated infection, sometimes it can cause infertility issues because it can cause scarring along the tubes. And so that can be an issue down the line when people aren't really...
And untreated, like, forever, or, like, if you had it, like, let's say you got it and, like, 4 years passed and you didn't know, would that still affect?
Yeah, it's fertility? Possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that's something that would have to be evaluated in the future. HIV is a situation where they would need to take antiviral medications. Right. And you know, there's wonderful medications out there now. And if untreated, certainly it ends up with skin issues. It can cause neurologic issues and organ
damage. What about the death rate of HIV? Because, like, obviously in the 80s, when it was first coming out, there weren't nearly as many treatments as now. Like, what is living with HIV now compared to then?
I find that from what I hear, infectious disease physicians are usually the ones who see those patients. Mm-hmm. But I understand that the quality of life that they have is actually quite great.
Okay.
People are living so much longer, taking less medications with less side effects, and doing very, very well. I don't have specific numbers, but...
Got it. Mm-hmm. So most of it's just stigma, it feels like.
It's stigma. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's ironic is that breast cancer actually used to have a huge stigma. Hmm. And really... And so there was a big push with one of the first ladies who was ended up diagnosed. I don't know if it was Roosevelt. But she ended up coming out, and it changed the stigma. And then they started pushing in terms of screening exams and, you know, talking about it. And then all of a sudden you've got these marches and research, and it really changed the stigma. I will tell you that some of the herpes community wants to have a big parade, and I'm just like, well, how about we just tell one person? Just tell one other person, and just kind of start there, and hopefully our communities will start to coalesce together, and then it'll just be so much more accepted.
My concern with something like that is, okay, so breast cancer, when there was stigma, now there is no stigma. You can have these marches, and they're, you know, people are trying to, they're pouring money into finding a cure and all that. But with something like STDs, what worries me is, which what I'm seeing with the gay community, we've talked about with some of our friends, is that HIV has this new stigma now. It's, you know, it's treatable with PrEP.
Mm.
So a lot of them are saying that they're no longer afraid of the disease, and they feel that there's some sort of liberation. And the result of that is, one, there is not lack, but there's less of a stigma with HIV, but there's less protection. And then there's also people are being less cautious with protection and when they're having, you know, sexual activities with each other. So it worries me that something like with herpes, on one hand, I want to say that, you know, there really should be no stigma attached to it, but I also don't want it to sound like this disease that everyone has, and feel free to spread it, and you know, don't be
right.
safe. You don't need to be that careful, because there's ways to get around it. It's just like eczema, you know. You'll just have to deal with it.
You don't
want to
make it that, like, no big of deal, because it still should be safe sex.
Still should be safe sex. So where is that middle ground?
Ooh, that's a $1 million question. I mean, and to add on top of what you were just saying, there are vaccines that are coming out that they're working on, where they're either trying to decrease outbreaks or to protect the partner from a person is herpes negative. So I don't know where that fine line is. I guess it's just as in moderation with the way that we eat our food. I think it's probably going to have to be the same with sex. And, you know, certainly, you know, we don't necessarily have to advocate for monogamy. But I also think it's important that if you are sexually active with multiple people, that you're using the protection right. that you can and disclosing as much as you can too.
We have to respect our partners, mm-hmm. right? And yep. that's one of the ways mm-hmm. is using protection and having safe sex and getting tested on a regular basis. Yeah. What do you think about people putting their status on their dating profile?
I think, you know, so there's a lot of different opinions because there are STD dating websites. You know, right. so there like are
people
ones.
To find other people. Mm-hmm.
And can then you name one right now?
So I think there's.
I have to look.
There's Truster is one that's actually out of San Francisco, and I think that they just came to Chicago. And that's an app that you can find mm-hmm. online.
Number one herpes dating site. PositiveSingles.com.
PositiveSingles, that's the one.
Is there like HIV dating sites? I'm
There's
sure.
There's an STD dating site called HSV Singles.
There are even ones for people who have who are HPV positive. There's wow. just a variety of different things out there, and I think that that's a fine, safe community because I suspect that there might be less judgment. Mm-hmm. But I also know that there are a lot of people on more popular dating sites, and that's actually the popular dating sites is where I was online dating. Mm-hmm. And some people do just put it right out there because they hope that they can kind of weed out the people who are going to be judgmental. Mm-hmm. Again, I didn't want to be defined by my virus.
Yeah.
Right. I wanted to be defined by the person that I am as Sheila, who is, you know, a law-abiding citizen, you know, and mm-hmm. and has this career and is doing all these cool things. So, but to each their own. Everybody's yeah. different.
Can you give some advice to any of our listeners who are having a hard time accepting their virus and coming out to just saying, yes, I have herpes or yes, I've had STDs? Mm-hmm. How should they get there? What are some of the steps that they can do?
So I know that the podcast is called Dateable. one of the things that I actually recommend is to take some time and not date for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I actually found that the 6 months that I took to not date was probably the best amount of time that I could have done for myself mm-hmm. because it gave me some time to go inward and to find out what is important to me. What am yep. I looking for in a partner? Who am I? You know, and I actually, through my book, there's, you know, a lot of the different exercises that I had gone through that actually helped to build my self-confidence. Because I found that once I built my self-confidence, no matter what anybody else thought about me, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter because I internally knew who I right. was. I valued who I was. And, you know, and I started this endeavor being like, you know, if I end up a 40-year-old woman who doesn't have a partner, but I could be a really awesome doctor and be a fantastic aunt, then that's just what my destiny is. And that is perfect. And so if we can stand on our own by ourselves with that confidence, mm-hmm. then no matter whatever happened, it didn't factor in.
And that's advice we've given people not with STDs too.
Yeah, so there you go.
It's not just STDs, but I can definitely see why that's applicable in this case.
Yeah.
'Cause it's news that's coming to about you in a way.
Yes. And so, and just learning to love yourself again, because it is a change. So I recommend just taking that time, and I recommend grieving. Because it's a time that you've had a loss of something, whether it's a loss of your sexual freedom, mm-hmm. whether it's a loss of belief in your body, whether it's learning how to recognize signs in your body and what it's trying to tell you. Those are all really good things to take time for yourself. So I always encourage that for people too.
I'm sure after your book came out, people have written in to say that you really helped them. Can you share one of those stories?
Yeah, I've had wonderful people who wanted to go into medicine and actually stopped when they were diagnosed.
Interesting.
Which I thought was very saddening, because you have someone who is so capable of helping other people, but because of something that happened to them, they just shut down. I've had this a handful of times. And I actually told them that by far they have probably the best experience ever right. to be a physician, a provider, a nurse, a whatever, because they're able to reach people on a level that I think our human race is looking for. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're looking for empathy. They're looking for compassion. And whether I haven't been through all the experiences that anybody in, you know, that I've seen before has ever had, I can understand a feeling of... Yep. You know, confusion and frustration and misunderstanding and communication. And so I think you can relate to people and people see that thread.
I know you were going to be, you were in pre-med before this yeah. happened. Were you always going to be an OBGYN or did that change because of this diagnosis?
I think it led me in that direction. Got it. I found that women felt very comfortable to share their intimate situations with me very easily. And then I just loved OBGYN just because of the nature of the delivering babies and the emergency room medicine and the continuity of care. It fit my personality very, very well.
Yeah. And one last question. So we had a listener write in say that she just started seeing this guy she met online and she really liked him. And through sort of a miscommunication over text, he had revealed that he had gonorrhea. And it wasn't really a text meant for her, but it's the reality of things. So her question is, how should she deal with the situation and how should she respond to him? Because she does really like him.
So I think it's important to realize that this person is in a very vulnerable space. Mm-hmm. In that instance, you know, it's through text, so it's a little bit different. I will say that I discovered that when I was telling partners, and I was in the beginning very, very nervous to the point where I was actually reading off of a script because I was afraid the words weren't going to come out well. Mm. And I was, you know, kind of tripping myself up and crying. And most of the partners would realize like, oh, she's talking about something serious. So they would actually kind of like perk up and lean in and could tell that I was visibly upset and that this was something really important for me to share. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important just to realize that this is a human being in front of you, and whether he had slipped up by accident, by text, he's sharing something very intimate about himself. Yep. So I think it's important to, when they're disclosing this, to take a breath and realize, you know, in her situation, okay, well, we hadn't been sexually intimate, so, you know, we can talk about this without the emotional anger part of it.
Right.
And just realize that some things are treatable, like gonorrhea, some things aren't, and just kind of realizing how you feel about that.
Right.
And if you can, you know, separate the person and the virus or the infection, and then just kind of go from there.
Or anything that you have that we didn't cover that you want to make sure that gets out there to people?
Yeah, I think it's really important to not judge others. Because until you actually know your own status and know that it's tried and true, it's hard to judge other people. It's kind of that, you know, don't throw stones until you kind of know where you're at.
Yeah.
And if people want to find your book, where can they find it?
Yeah, so it's found on Amazon. You can either have a soft copy mailed to you. I do know it's a very bold title, so there's also the Kindle download version. So you can always do that. I'm on Facebook. I have a public page. It's Dr. Sheila GYN. I'm on Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat. And then I have my website, which is Dr. Dr. Sheila, Sheila. Loanzon, Loanz as in zebra, on.com.
Fantastic. I want to see people rocking your book on the subway.
Yeah. I've had some people send me pictures. They're my family members, so I'd love to put that challenge out there. If anybody wants to send me that picture, and you can, you know, put it in random places.
Yeah, that could go viral, and no pun intended.
Yeah.
And obviously, feel free to reach out to Sheila, but if anyone has any other questions that they want to send to us, we're happy to send them along to you as well.
Please do.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So listeners at home, we want to hear your stories, your questions, whatever it may be. You can contact us in any way. And if you want to be a guest on our show, we can always keep you anonymous to protect your identity if necessary. All right. So on that note, last but not least,
stay dateable.
Your action item for this week is to go get tested. It's the least you can do for yourself and for your partners. Hey, I think sexual liberation's great. Go fuck each other's brains out. But we have to do it responsibly. We have to prioritize our health and our safety. We're all adults here, so we should start acting like adults. Starting with getting tested. We want to give a huge dateable shout out to Nick, who has been helping us with sound. Thank you so much for your generosity, your kindness, and your technical skills to make all of us sound better on air. Thank you again, Nick. If you didn't know already, in our off-season, we launched a premium series called the Why Series, where we dissect, analyze, and offer solutions to some of the most common dating conundrums. We've had some great feedback on how actionable these episodes are, so check it out on our website under the tab Why Series. Or you can now buy directly from iTunes Music. Another exciting announcement is that we revamped our website. We now have written stories from past guests and writers, and we have playlists to organize episodes by topics. These playlists can also be found on SoundCloud. So check out all the content we now have on datablepodcast.com. The most efficient way to meet new people is a combination of online and offline. 500 Brunches has your offline covered. Connect over brunch with new friends. Come alone or bring a buddy. There is always a table full of friendly faces, mimosas, and eggs benedict. Sign up at 500brunches.com and use the code DATEABLE for a free entry. To connect with us, visit datablepodcast.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all under Datable Podcast. Mm-hmm.